But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire. But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire.
Good morning and welcome to Playing with Fire, Long Island's only food, wine, and lifestyle show. I'm your host, Tom Shodell, and I'm here with producer and co-host Stu Schrager. Good morning, Stu.
Good morning, Tom. I don't even recognize you sitting right across from me.
I know, haircut, you know, whatever. I'm ready. I'm ready to go. I'm sorry I've been away, but I had a little bit of a health issue, a little COVID bout, which was actually nothing more than a head cold, really. And I guess hopefully that's due to the vaccination process or whatever, but it wasn't really bad. But, you know, you have to kind of, I guess, sequester yourself in the house because everybody else is at risk. So we did that a week, and then I was in Napa, you know, last week. So I apologize, but I'm back now, and here we are.
But you're full of adventure and stories to share.
I do. I have a bunch of stories. You know, I was going to go out there, and let's just give me a little background here. Those of you who've been listening to the show for any length of time know that I'm not a huge fan of big California Reds. To me, they kind of taste all the same, and it's not to knock California winemaking. They do make great wine out there, but, you know, it's just sometimes it's not for you. And it wasn't the style that I preferred. I preferred the cooler climate styles of Bordeaux and Long Island or whatever. I think there's more interesting things going on there. And anyway, so that said, I think that California, through the writings of one Robert Parker, who owns a publication called The Wine Advocate, and he was a big sort of proponent of those big flavor, big alcohol wines that they were making in California and continue to make, actually. But there's a growing number of winemakers now that I guess started to think about doing it a different way, and they're trying to kind of get more of the terroir into the wines, where they're picking a little earlier. You know, they're not letting the sugars develop so much, and the alcohol levels are down at manageable levels in the 13s, high 12s, 13s, not the 15s and 14s and 15s like the other, wines that are being made out there. And so I went out to see some of these guys, and I got to tell you, I was turned around. I mean, they're making some really drop-dead good wine out there. Now, the places I went to, I won't lie to you, the wines are expensive. I mean, very expensive. One guy who owns Kenzo Winery, if you ever see any of this wine around, grab it. And I promise you, it's worth the money, but it's expensive. I mean, my cost on some of these bottles are, you know, wholesale, $200. So they're really pricey. But so is, you know, Della Valle and Harlan, and, you know, some of those wines go for $1,000, $1,500, $2,000 a bottle. So it's in that range. Here's a guy, this guy, and I can't think of his name for the life of me, Japanese fella. He's like the Bill Gates of Japan. And from what I hear, acreage in California now, in Napa, is going for about $2 million an acre, if you can imagine. He bought 3,800 acres.
3,800.
Yeah, do the math. I mean, because by the time you get done, it'll be, you know, the show will be over. It'll be Monday, you know. That's more like algebra than math, you know. Anyway, so he bought 3,800 acres, and he makes these wines, and they're all brilliant. And about half of them go to Japan, maybe more than half. He exports to Japan. But I tasted a bunch of his wines, like seven or eight of his wines. There's another man called David Arthur who opened a vineyard. And both of these vineyards are very high in the mountain. They're I think Kenzo was 2,300 feet up, and I think David Arthur's in that, you know, 1,800 feet up. So it's mountain fruit, and it tastes different than the valley fruit. You can almost tell when it's grown higher for whatever reason. It's the soil content, or I'm not sure. I don't know the, you know, all the specifics of it, but really, really fabulous wines, just fabulous. And then, of course, you know, I was going to go out there and play golf at Pebble Beach. And, you know, I was going to take a couple days in Napa and then do a day in San Francisco and drive down to Pebble Beach and play golf there. But my daughter decided to hitch a ride with me out there. And so that kind of messed up my golf plans a little bit. And for that, I'll be forever mad at her. But anyway, so we had a daddy-daughter trip. It was a lot of fun, you know. No brawling. You know, we went to probably two, three wineries a day. And we had lunch and, you know, between, and then dinner out, and then rinse and repeat for 5 days. It was fabulous. And I got to tell you, you know, a little plug for JetBlue. They do just such a great job. I mean, you know, we got to the airport. I was through the whole boarding pass, you know, process and putting the luggage in and all of that, probably within 8-10 minutes at the most. There was really only on the way out to San Francisco, there was probably the plane was maybe a third full. So you had plenty of room. And, you know, they have the TV in the back of the seat, which is always kind of fun on a longer trip like that. It's like 6 hours to get out there, you know. And it was great. I mean, great flying. Coming back, same thing. You know, maybe the plane was half full coming back. It wasn't much going on. But I couldn't say enough good things about JetBlue. They were great. You know, they were just, you know, nobody hassled you for vaccination cards and all of that. With all the stuff that you hear, I didn't see any of that. And maybe when you're flying out of the country, they do that. I don't know what the deal is with that. But, you know, we just got on the plane and off we went. 6 hours later, smooth as glass, we landed in San Francisco. And I hadn't been there in a long time, probably 15 years. My daughter had never been in San Francisco. So we spent the last night there and just had great meals. And, you know, when you go to a place like Napa, it's like a very large North Fork, you know. People are out there and they're interested in food and wine. And we went to a couple of places that were just, you know, a couple of restaurants that I'll get into in a little bit here that were just great. And we also stopped at a taco stand that was on one of the vineyard properties. And we stopped at this deli kind of general store thing. And that was fun. Things that you can't do in New York. And California's legislated just as difficult as New York, probably. But they allow you to do things that you couldn't do here. Like, we were in this little general store, and it was like almost like, you know, what's that place in Roslyn there that they do the catering out of? You know the place I mean? It's right on Glen Cove Road.
Oh, Kitchen Cabaret?
Kitchen Cabaret. So if you can imagine going into a Kitchen Cabaret that sells wine, and wine by the glass out of a preservation unit, you know, it just wouldn't happen here. They wouldn't give you the license, you know. It's just a fabulously fun place to visit, Napa, you know. And Sonoma, too. Well, we didn't get up there because I was kind of concentrating on some of the Napa wines. But it was just, you know, a pleasure to be there. The weather was great. It was probably in the, you know, between 50 and 60 degrees most days we were there. And at night, it got a little cool, got down in the 40s or whatever. But that's what did Mark Twain say one time? He said, the coldest winter I ever spent was summer in San Francisco. You know, it does get, you know, with the fog and everything out there, it was fabulous.
So this is so unscripted, but you just talked about JetBlue and flying and all that.
Yeah.
And one of our P1 listeners, Ron Boning, had emailed us earlier in the week. We've had to play a couple of repeat programs in your absence.
Sure, yeah.
So Ron writes in, "Stu and Tom, hope you guys are dug out of the snow. What a storm we had." I guess, Tom, you came back just in time for the snow, right?
Yeah, I did. I got back just in time for the snow. And it's funny, you know, when I used to tell Gene all the time, why does it always have to happen on a Saturday? I'm telling you, every snowstorm of any significance in the last 25 years has been on a Saturday, which is the busiest day in the restaurant. And, you know, you shut down, you probably make, you know, this time of year out east, I probably do 40% of my business in one day. You know what I mean? It's just, it never ends. It's always a Saturday.
I understand. So Ron goes on to say, "Tom, you have talked about corks, screw caps, and box wine. I just heard that Delta Airlines is going to start serving cans of wine on their flights to cut down on plastic waste. Can't seem to be a good idea. You won't have to consume the whole bottle. Tom, what are your thoughts on cans of wine?"
I think they should make them 32 ounces. No, I'm okay with all of it. I mean, I think that anything that gets people to appreciate wine or drink wine is a good thing. And you know, I hate to be the, you know, the voice of the proponent of drinking, and it's not really the same with wine. It's different, you know. Yeah, the buzz is there, and yeah, you can abuse it just like any other alcohol. But, you know, for the most part, wine is made to be drunk with food. And I think that's the reason it came about, and that's what I like about it, is trying to match those different wines with food. Now, don't get me wrong. I've matched it with, you know, cornflakes. I've matched it with TV shows. I've matched it with, you know, with friends in the dark and reading a book. But, you know, the bottom line is it's really made for food. And when you find that combination, or when I've started to find those combinations between the flavors of the wine and the flavors of the food that meld so well, or not, you know, it's really an education process that, you know, I think that I've always said that wine and food has the ability to freeze a moment in time for you, like a photograph. And some of those quote-unquote photographs in my head, I'll remember to my grave. I mean, I remember being at Charlie Trotter's. I can tell you exactly what I ate and exactly what wine I drank with it over the course of 8 to 10, 12 courses, you know? So it does have that ability. And I think that when you finally get to appreciate all the work that goes into wine, you know, the farming, the weather, the aging process, oak, no oak, stainless steel, concrete, whatever, you know, and then the blending of the different grapes, it's really an artful process that, you know, if you gave, you know, I've done a lot of wine blending in my life. So if you gave me Kareem Massoud, Jim Waters, and Roman Roth, you know, the same four barrels of juice to blend, we'd all come up with different things. It's almost like the chef basket, you know, you give, like on Chop, they give them a basket and you get, you know, four different ideas of what to do. And it's the same. And it becomes a personality signature of the winemaker or the blender, you know, how their palate perceives that wine should be. And so, you know, I have so much respect for those guys and admiration for what they do and the pleasure that, you know, you get. I mean, I have a date coming up this weekend with a friend of mine who is a very deep seller, and he's been threatening to bring out a case of old Burgundy and a case of different, you know, 12 different bottles. I said, we have 3 days, Bob. I mean, you know, maybe a case is too much, you know. And then I'm thinking on the side, maybe it's not enough. I don't know. You know, it depends on how good they are. But, you know, to go through those wines and realize that they've been in the bottle since 1985, 86, you know, where were you in 86? You think about, you know, how old you were, what you were doing. And that wine's been sitting there waiting, you know, for all that time, hopefully getting better or at least holding. You know, I have my doubts about some of it, but we'll see. I'll give you a full report next week.
So my question goes to this. In recent times, for whatever reason, they've been talking about alcohol-free wines and
right.
liquors, I guess.
Right, yeah.
And so the question is, what's the difference? Different experience and taste of a non-alcoholic wine, and this, how does it relate to this dining experience? Because I don't know if the alcohol boosts your enlightenment and enjoyment, or, you know, how does all this?
Well, it allows the wine to ferment, you know what I mean? And that's the difference in the flavors. I mean, otherwise, you just have grape juice. You might as well go get a can of Welch's.
But they're talking about alcohol-free wines now.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I'm sure. Look, there's an ass for every chair. I mean, there's a, you know, market for almost anything. If you can sell cow manure in the United States, you know, for fertilizer, you can sell anything. So, yeah, there's a market for it, I'm sure. But it, to me, I don't know. It's like lead-free gas, you know what I mean? Whatever. If you'd have to have it for your car, great. But I would rather have, you know, the real deal, you know, and something that's not manipulated like that.
Well, then,
because it's just crushed grape juice at that point, you know?
Interesting. And then I guess the next question goes, and I know that you're not a beer guy, but, you know, when you talk about a light beer compared to a regular beer,
yeah.
I mean, is it just somebody trying to watch their waistline, or are they sacrificing taste? And
I don't know. I mean, when I was a beer drinker, I used to drink Amstel Light because, well, for two reasons. One, I kind of got used to it. I liked the flavor. And B, you could drink 30 of them and still function. You know what I mean? It wasn't, you know, I don't know if the alcohol level was probably lower. I've seen some of these craft beers where the alcohol level is like 6-7%, which is pretty high for beer, you know. And, you know, I've watched people have one or two of those and, you know, they walk out cross-eyed, you know. So you got to kind of pay attention to the alcohol levels. But I guess, yeah, I guess it's like, it's just different markets, you know. Some people want that robust, you know, ale, you know, big, fatty beer kind of Guinness-y thing. And then other people, you know, looking for a lighter style IPA or whatever, you know. And there's, I guess there's a market for all of it.
So my next item on the agenda, I mean, it's been weeks since I sat face-to-face.
You have a whole agenda there with items.
So I dined in a restaurant the other night. And my friend would normally, it was an Italian restaurant, not a red sauce restaurant. My friend would usually go for a Chianti, and maybe his pokey finger extended over the line, and the waitress brought a different wine and started opening it and then said, you know, what it was. And my friend says, oh, that's not a Chianti. So I'm going to try to pronounce the wine. Montepulciano?
Montepulciano, yeah.
So can you compare that to a Chianti. I'm going to tell you, I thought it was a lighter wine. It wasn't a taste comparison, it was recollection.
Right.
I thought it was a lighter drink than the Chianti that I thought had more legs, that was just more...
More body. Yeah. Well, you know, look, I've had Montepulciano's that are light and breezy. I've had ones that were Lou Ferrigno, you know, to pound you over the head. The difference is the grape. I mean, you know, Chianti is generally Sangiovese or Sangiovese Grosso, and Montepulciano is Montepulciano. And you can get Montepulciano's that are different grape varieties, but that's not the real deal. The real deal is a Montepulciano is a grape variety, you know? So that's the primary difference.
Well,
but difference with Montepulciano, Montepulciano's in Chianti, in the area, in the region. You know, it's a town. You know, Chianti is like Nassau County, and Montepulciano would be Westbury, you know?
So if somebody was on a menu and want, was, you know, should I get the Montepulciano or should I get the Chianti? And you were trying to say, well, this is going to be like this, and this, as compared to this being, how would you describe the difference?
I don't know. I think the Chiantis have a little more acid to them.
Okay.
So they tend to have they're a little more food friendly, you know, over a wide variety of plates.
Mm-hmm.
Montepulciano's tend to be, yours notwithstanding, a little more muscular sometimes.
Oh.
You know, like I said, I've had some big ones. But, I like them both, you know, for different reasons. But that's kind of how I would explain it. I think the Chianti's, you know, the Sangiovese tends to have a little more acid to it than the Montepulciano. But, you know, both noble grapes and both, you know, great with food. And, you know, I would get a bottle of each, personally.
I'm definitely following that.
And it's fun to drink them side by side. You know, we did that a lot when I was in Napa. You know, we had different, we stopped at this place, Robert Craig Vineyards. And he's in Napa. And obviously we didn't leave Napa. So, yeah, he was there. But, we had about five or six of his reds, and we started to drink them side by side. And you could, you know, as you were looking at the bottle, there were different vineyard sites. You know, one was a little higher up than the other. And you could taste the nuanced differences between the wines, which is always fun to do it that way. And it's hard to do it, you know, I'll have a bottle of this and tomorrow I'll have a bottle of that and compare them, because you kind of forget. But when they're right next to each other and you're drinking them side by side, you can actually see the differences. So it's a really fun way to taste wines. And boy, did we ever. I mean, we had a bunch of them. And, you know, it's kind of funny. Early in the morning, Courtney booked a trip to, you know, a side trip to Schramsberg, where they make sparkling wine out there, at 9 in the morning. Right. So by 9:30, after the, you know, the tour of the caves and everything, and they have these caves where they have 1,400,000 bottles in this cave underground at Schramsberg. It's huge. It's like the catacombs. It's all over the place. Bottles everywhere, you know? And so we tasted like five or six of their sparkling wines. It was 9:30 in the morning. You know, I hadn't even, you know, I don't eat breakfast generally. So empty stomach and all. And, you know, I was spitting. I didn't taste much. You know, I was pouring it out, you know. But it was great, because you could see the differences between the reserve, you know, which is aged a little longer, and the one that they put out, and then the rosé where it had skin contact, and then the one that was just kind of a cash cow, you know, sort of an inexpensive expression. It was just so much fun. And then, you know, right after that, we went to a second winery, and, you know, we had some wines there, a place called Ashes and Diamonds, which is an unusual name and an unusual winery. And we had a great little cheese plate there, and, you know, drank some of their wines. And I'm actually going to bring some back east. I mean, I think that they do a great job. And, you know, relatively speaking, they're not all that expensive. But if you find Ashes and Diamonds anywhere in your local wine shop, you know, what's his name over here?
Stu Leonard's.
Stu Leonard's, yeah. Check it out. Ask them if they have any Ashes and Diamonds. They make a couple of really nice whites, a Sauvignon Blanc and a Chardonnay. And then they have a bunch of pretty, very pretty reds. But there's one called the Pequeño Vineyard, little in Spanish, Pequeño. And that was one of my favorite, that and Red Hen. But the Pequeño was the one for me. I think it's a mixture of Merlot Cab and a lot of Cab Franc, which I'm a fan of. So that made sense to my palate, you know, and I like that one the best. But they were they're a great little winery that are doing very, very terroir-based wines. They're not big alcohol, crazy reds like, you know, most people are used to drinking from California. These are a little more on the, I want to say, sophisticated side, a little more on the nuanced side, where the flavors are a little different. They pick the grapes earlier, so they don't get quite as ripe as some of the grapes do in California because of the sunshine. And I think they express the area for me better than a lot of the other wines out there. Another place we went to that was super cool was a place called Adams. And they have an Italian winemaker, and he showed us all around and took us out in a Jeep, and we toured the vineyard sites and, you know, the mountain and all of that, and a lot of fun. Then we came back in and drank his wines, and his wines were great. If you ever come across Adams, A-D-A-M-V-S, not U-S, they spell it with a V, it's Adams, but really good wine. Everyone that we went to was just great, and the restaurants are cool. You know, the restaurants are... The difference out there is when I go out there, I don't see people agonizing over every ingredient. You know, I don't see the allergy issues that we have here. I don't see the gluten stuff. You know, people basically eat what's on the menu. You know, they go in there, they order something on the menu, they eat it and go home. And so, you know, it's not the blood sport that it is here. You know, with all of the, I can't have that, I can't have that. Put it on the side, put it on the top, take it, remove it, put it over here. I can't eat, you know, all the shenanigans that go on here. And great little, like, I went to Mustard's when I first got there, Mustard's Grill. And Mustard's Grill's probably been there 30 years, 35 years. It opened, I believe, in the 80s. I'm going to say around 83, 4, maybe something like that. And I had been there a couple of times when I was out there previously. And I told Courtney, I said, this is the quintessential California restaurant, Napa restaurant. We got to go there for lunch. So we stopped. And there's you know, obviously in California, you have a lot of Spanish influence, you know, from Mexico, Central America. You know, there's a lot of immigrant, you know, cooking going on there, which is great. And so we had, we went there, we had these mushroom and corn tamales. And for people who don't know what tamales are, it's like a corn masa. It's a corn flour thickened, almost not like a pudding, almost like a polenta. All right. And it's basically flavored with lard and you know, whatever. You can put pulled pork in there, you can put mushrooms in there, whatever. So anyway, we had mushrooms, corn, and it's wrapped up in a corn husk and steamed for about an hour and 10 minutes, whatever. And so what happens is it comes to the plate and you open up the corn husk and you have this like kind of soft corn polenta inside with whatever flavorings are in there. And it was brilliant. We had this great little one, had a nice little tomatillo salsa on it. And then we had an avocado tostada. And a tostada is basically, you know, Mexican food is interesting because they use a lot of the same ingredients and a lot of the same things, but they'll use them in different ways and have different names. I always tease that, you know, most Mexican food is red pile, brown pile, green pile, sour cream, you know, and you're off, you know. One's a chimichanga, one's a burrito, one's a taco, but it's all kind of the same, you know. This was a tostada is one of my favorites. I make them a lot. It's basically a flour or a corn tortilla that's fried. And it's put on the plate, and I usually put a little guacamole on there to keep it from sliding, you know. And then some killer black beans are on there, and then you have a little salad, vegetables or whatever, a slaw. And then whatever your item is on top, fish or, you know, you have chicken, tostada. I've done all kinds of tostadas. And then usually a salsa or a vinaigrette on top. And what I like about teaching people how to make that is that if you have that technique down, you have literally probably 50 dishes that you can make because you can change the tostada. You can use corn or you can use flour. You know, you can change the salad. You know, you can use baby greens. You can use mustard greens. You can use arugula, you know, iceberg, whatever you want on there, or coleslaw, or some kind of vegetable slaw. You can put all manner of vegetables in there, broccolini, broccoli, spinach, whatever. You can change the topping. You can use blackfish, swordfish, tuna, chicken, beef, pulled pork, you know, pulled chicken, right down the line. And then you can change the vinaigrette on there. And you can make a salsa. You can make a salsa with tomatoes, with mangoes, with pineapple, with, you know. So you have all these combinations that you can make out of one technique, a tostada. And that's why I love them. So what they did down there was they grilled an avocado. They had broccolini in the salad, which is like an aspiration, you know, the long, thin broccoli. They had that in there. They had the black beans that were really seasoned nicely under that. And then they put this grilled avocado on the top. So it was one of these really light vegetarian kind of things. It was just a great lunch, you know.
you talk about grilled avocado. So to prepare that, is it grilled? Like, do you cut it in half and then put it with the skin down?
No skin. You take it out.
Really?
Yeah, you take it out, spray it with a little oil, and then put it right
on
the grill.
So does that mean you're using one that's less ripe? Because, no. I mean, it's so many times that avocado is really soft.
Yeah. Well, you know, you can't smash it on a grill. You got to be kind of careful. But if you just place it gently on the grill, it'll just get those grill marks and a little bit of smoke from the grill. Turn it over. Same thing. I mean, you're not leaving it on there very long. You just want to get some marks on there, you know, and heat it through. And it was a great lunch. We had just a fabulous lunch and a lot of fun and just.
And what did you drink with that?
We had two glasses of Ferrari Carano Chardonnay, which is a very nice Chardonnay from Napa. And, you know, not too oaky, not too woody. It just all went very, very nicely with it. And we had a little gem. We split a little gem salad, like a Caesar. A little gem is a type of lettuce. It's these miniature little leaves of romaine. So we had that. It was just so much fun and such a good time. And I can't say enough about mustards. Anybody ever gets out to Napa, it's really a requisite stop. You have to go there. It's, like I said, it's been around forever. She had another place called, the chef's name is Cindy Paulson. She's, I guess she's probably my age now. She's probably in the late 60s. And just talented woman, and she had a place called Fog City Diner, which was one of my favorite restaurants ever. It was like a diner on steroids. I mean, a diner with a raw bar. I mean, you could order, you know, great meatloaf and blue paid specials and, you know, meat and potatoes things. But they were all really well done, you know, very well done. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a menu like you see at diners here where there's 1,000 items. You know, there were like, you know, 15 to 20 really well thought out dishes. Good stuff. Anyway, let's take a little break, and I'll tell you some more about some of the restaurants I stopped in while I was out there.
Attention seafood lovers. Check out FreshFinGourmet.com. You can enjoy specialty seafood delivered directly to your door. Their seafood products are sourced from mineral-rich waters across the globe and are responsibly harvested. Family-owned and operated by the Gulo family, who began their legacy in the food business from their personal love for seafood. You can order sushi-grade octopus, squid, Chilean sea bass, wild Dover sole fillet, and much more. And it's not just fish. They also offer premium meat, imported Sicilian desserts, and delicious pasta. Try their Italian sausage or veal rib chop. Get the fastest delivery and shipping in the business. And their attention to detail in both packaging and shipping assures freshness and quality. Go to FreshFinGourmet.com and see the vast array of choices for your special meal creation. That's Fresh, F-I-N, Gourmet.com. Specialty seafood delivered directly to your door with FreshFinGourmet.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Playing with Fire on 1100 WHLI and 104.7 WHLI FM, Long Island's own food, wine, and lifestyle show with your host, Tom Shawdell, chef, author, and restaurateur.
All right. So you know my penchant for, you know, restaurant hopping when I go out on some of these excursions. I like to go to two or three restaurants a night. Because I find appetizers infinitely more interesting than entrees most of the time. And I want to get in as much research and development as possible when I go on these things, because it's not really always about just the eating. It's about, you know, lighting techniques or service issues or plating things or things the way other people do it. So you gather these ideas and hopefully incorporate some of the better ones into your repertoire and eliminate some of the ones that you may have that you see don't work well, other people do them, you know? So for me, it's a lot of fun. You know, it's a little harder when I'm dragging somebody else around with me, you know? And so Courtney was with me, my daughter. And so the first night we got there, she wanted to go to this place, Angelie, which is like a French bistro. And I was a little hesitant because I was out there specifically to drink California wines with dinner. And I looked at the wine list and it was mostly French. You know, they had a couple of California bottlings, but we went there and it was a very nice restaurant. And we sat at the bar and had dinner, and we started off with some oysters, some West Coast oysters, and they were really good. And I was drinking a little, Muscadet with the oysters, which is the classic French white that they, you know, serve with oysters in Paris and in Bordeaux and stuff, you know. So, you know, I'm thinking, okay, the only thing missing here is a striped shirt and a beret, you know what I mean? I should be wearing a bicycle. Anyway, so we had that, and then after that, we ordered the sweetbreads, and the sweetbreads came on a little bit of puff pastry with cream fraiche and black trumpet mushrooms, which are always kind of interesting to me. You know, it was a lot of fun. And a lot of people get turned off by sweetbreads. They think they're brains because they kind of look like that.
No, it's neck glands, right?
It's the thymus gland of the cow and or the veal. And it tastes just like a veal cutlet. I mean, it's really kind of takes on whatever sauce is with it, you know. I like them, and you don't see them that much. So whenever I see them, I order them. And I actually ordered them in another restaurant 2 days later, too, just because I hadn't had my fill yet. And we also had a really interesting little pâté, you know, which in French bistro cooking is a classic. And it's made with, you know, pork liver and chicken liver and some pork fat and some spices and stuff. And it was baked on croûte, which means it was, you know, baked in a puff pastry or a pastry shell, you know, which was kind of fun. Because, I don't see that stuff that much. I don't go to a lot of French bistros. And we don't have a lot of them out here, actually. I think there's, you know, Sage Bistro is the only one I can think of offhand. There's probably a couple that I'm missing. But anyway, and you have them in the city. You know, you have Pastis and Balthazar and those places. But I don't get in there as much as I'd like to. So we had the pâté. And then I came across this Bourgogne, which is a red Pinot Noir from Burgundy region that was absolutely stellar. And I had probably one too many glasses. I wasn't driving, so it wasn't a problem. But just a great little restaurant and a lot of fun. And there's a conviviality sitting at the bar, Stu. I don't know how many times you do that in the course of your travels. I know that you go out with your other half a lot and a lot of other people. So it's kind of hard to sit in a line and converse. You know, it's easier at a table. But I'm usually out with one other person or by myself, so or two maybe at the most. So it's okay for me. And I'd rather sit at the bar and eat.
Yeah, you always say that. And, yeah. It's a good scenario. I end up usually, again, it's usually I'm dining with Kerry or whatever, so I will end up at a table. But, push comes to shove. If we need to eat and we have to sit, like I talk about Frankie and Johnny's all the time in the city, and they used to have a counter, and if we messed up on our reservation or whatever, got there too late, whatever it takes, it's all good. Usually it's you're actually more attentively taken care of by the bartender.
Yeah, well, you never lose your waiter. I mean, he's not meandering around the kitchen having a cigarette outside, whatever. He's stuck there, you know, so you have him all the time.
Hey, listen, I'm a man of means. That means whatever needs to be done, because I've been on dates where I had to sit behind my date because I couldn't get two seats next to each other in the row. So she sat in front, I sat in back, and, intermission was fun.
There you go. Yeah, so, we went to a bunch of restaurants out there, and I love the California vibe in these places because they tend not to, on Long Island, and I'm guilty of it too, we all tend to gravitate to the usual suspects, and I don't know why that is. I try and break out of that sometimes, but you always get real. How come there's no Caesar salad on the menu? You know, you get all of that stuff, and after a while, you just throw your hands up and give up, but you know, out there, they don't do that so much. And the second night, we went to this place called Onetri. And Onetri is an Italian restaurant run by a young chef. And, we sat at the bar, and we had a bottle of, it was an Italian restaurant. Again, they didn't have a lot of Napa wines on there. So, all right, when in Italy, we'll go Italian. So we had a bottle of Mulo Turgau from northern Italy, which is one of my favorite whites. It's an odd grape. A lot of people don't know about it. It's spelled Muller-Thurgau, Mulo Turgau. It's a, Germanic kind of name. And up there in northern Italy, you have a lot of, Swiss and Germanic cooking and stuff because of the leaking of the border there and, people going across back and forth. Anyway, Onetri was fun. We wound up having a charcuterie plate because we had a late lunch. I wasn't really looking to have a lot of dinner. But they had four types of house-made charcuterie on there. They had a wild boar sausage. They had a regular kind of salami. They had another one that was made from rabbit. They had a rabbit sausage on there and one other that I can't remember. And a couple of cheeses. And it was just a lot of fun to, have the wine and eat that. And then we split a plate of pasta that was almost like a fusilli. Like a squiggly coil pasta.
Oh, wow.
With a kale pesto, which was really
kale
nice.
Kale pesto?
Yeah, it was really done well. A little lemon in there, had some lemon zest in there, had some pine nuts in there. It had kale and onion or whatever was in there. And just cheese, obviously. A lot of fun, very light, I felt like California, man. Like, hey, dude, I was really kind of out and chilling.
So when you say all that, and the ambience of California. First, let's quickly go from here. It was snowing, cold weather. What was the weather out there?
The night and early mornings were in the 40s, and then it got to the 50s in the first 2 days we were there, and then to the 60s, and I think it even might have touched 70 one day, but no higher than that.
And what was the mindset of like outdoor dining? Like, I mean, here on Long Island, people are still eating in these structures outside. I guess the storm actually did some devastation to some of them.
Yeah, that'll fix your outside.
But, I mean, in California, are they still into the outdoor dining vibe?
Yeah, I mean, it's both. I mean, you know, we were inside. There were people outside. It's whatever you're comfortable with, you know. So we ate inside, exclusively inside, for no other reason, and I'm not worried about it. And, you know, that's what it was, you know, so we sat down on the inside. But it was a lot of fun. The next night we went to a place called Compline, Compline. It's right in the town of Napa, and it's a little bit of a wine bar slash with a wine store attached, which again you could never do here. They won't let you do that for whatever reason. They got rules that make no sense to anybody but the government people.
So wait. But we had a friend in that was out east that. Did he have a cafe adjacent to a wine shop or something?
Who was that?
He put cheeses in and some sandwiches.
Yeah, he's got a cheese shop, and he sells a little wine for lunch. He's got a little license. But that's like a restaurant, you know.
Okay.
It's the same thing. So this guy, you could purchase the wine from the wine shop, or you could order wine off the list. They had both, you know, and they had a stellar wine list. Whoever put it together was really on point because the wine list was great. And we went there for a reason that we had been at Adams that day at the winery. We were talking to the winemaker. Adams with a V. And he had his own little thing going on, you know. He was making a Pinot Noir, which is, you know, in California, no easy task. You know, a lot of them taste like they're big and rich, and they taste like almost like Syrah. But he said that he made this like European-style Pinot Noir that he was very proud of. It was called EMA, I think, or ERA or EMA. Anyway, so he said it's, you know, they sell it at this place, Compline. It's a wine bar in Napa. I said, yeah, all right, we'll go there tonight, you know. So we did. We went there and ordered a bottle. And I got to tell you, it was brilliant. The wine was fabulous. It was nice, light. It almost, the color looked like a French Pinot. It kind of drank like a French Pinot. The alcohol level was low. I think it was 12.5 or maybe 13 at the most. It was really a pleasant bottle of wine and not expensive. It was like $50 or whatever. So we had this interesting little tasting going on. We had a beef tartare with like a black garlic aioli and juniper cured egg yolk, you know, with some toast points or whatever. We had some focaccia or whatever they served with it. And that was real good. And then we had French fries that were cooked in duck fat, which I always look for anyway, because it's always kind of fun to see French fries with potatoes and duck fat. It gives it a little more flavor. I mean, you won't walk away going, oh, wow, I mean, I taste the duck. But it's just kind of there's a subtle thing about it that it's different than the regular oils, you know. So we had that. And then they had a sweetbread on the menu again.
Again? Wow, that's...
So I had to do it, you know.
Sweetbreads were like a mainstay at bar mitzvahs and Jewish weddings.
Were they?
And it's gone the way of everything disappearing.
Yeah, well, it's you know, they're fatty. I mean, it's like foie gras or liver. I mean, there's the fat content that people, I guess, are... And offal isn't really, you know, the organ meats, they're not really all that popular anymore like they were in the 40s.
If I recollect, it almost looked like small pieces of, like, chicken cutlet.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, they cut
it. And it was usually in a sauce.
Yeah, exactly. So this was made like a schnitzel. It was, like, pounded a little bit, breaded and fried, you know, which was great. And they served it with spetzel, which is that, you know, egg-flour combination. It's like a noodle, you know. And they had an interesting little... take on it. They had it with like black trumpet mushrooms again and a little bit of lemon. And it was just fabulous, you know. And then we had a bottle of Albert Boxler Riesling. Now, Albert Boxler is one of my favorite producers.
You've mentioned him before.
Yeah, he's from Alsace, which is on the eastern side of France, southeastern side of France, right on the Swiss border and the German border. And if you taste those wines, there's a real, you know, you can taste the land almost at those wines. They're fabulous, and he's kind of a small producer, and his stuff is hard to find. But when you find it, you got to grab it. It's phenomenal stuff. And so we just, you know, had that bottle of wine and just had a ball there. And I can't say enough about the place. Again, if you're, these are places I would recommend highly to anybody who's in Napa, right in the town. And if you go to Napa, you can actually stay in the I guess it's the city of Napa. It's probably the size of Hempstead, something like that, maybe a little smaller, or Huntington. And it's, yeah, Huntington's more like it, about the size of Huntington. And they have some nice hotels there, and you can walk around. You know, if you're drinking wine, you can, you don't have to take a car. You can walk around from restaurant to restaurant. There's a bunch of restaurants there that are fun. And then the last night, we saved the best for last. We went back into San Francisco because Courtney had never been there. And, you know, I wanted to get her a ride on a cable car and, you know, do the tourist thing. We went up to the wharf. You know, we had some... oysters at the wharf, and then we walked down to this place called Lamar, which is on the Embarcadero. The Embarcadero is like a road that hugs the coastline of San Francisco, where all the big ships come in, I guess, embark and, you know, on their voyages or whatever. And Lamar is a Peruvian restaurant that has some of the best ceviches I've ever had in my life. And so we ate there, and I said to her, save some room because there's a place called Catonia that I want to go to. It's an Italian restaurant. So we had two ceviches and a couple of, what do they call them? Oh, God, I'm losing the name here. I'll think of it. It's raw fish, but it's sliced. Tiradito. We had a salmon tiradito and like a almost like an avocado leche de tigre. Leche de tigre is milk of the tiger, and it's really the juice that that the ceviche is cooked in. It's lime juice and sometimes other fruit juices like orange or whatever and some peppers or chilies. But we had a tasting of three of them. We had a halibut, a tuna, and an octopus ceviche. And they were all brilliant. They were all different. They were all brilliant. And then we had this salmon tiradito, which was great. And so it was like eating sushi. I mean, you weren't really all that full. And then we took a cab or an Uber down to a place called Catonia. And Catonia is owned by a guy named Michael Tusk, a chef, who has a place called Quince. And Quince is, I think, either a 2 or 3-star Michelin restaurant. It's very, very well regarded. And it's tasting menus only, whatever. But he opened up next door this place called Catonia, which is an Italian restaurant. And he uses, because they're not open during the day at Quince, they're only open for dinner, he uses that kitchen to make all the pastas and pizza doughs and things, desserts that are served in this other restaurant, Catonia, because they're connected. They're in the same building right next door to each other. And I got to tell you, we had some really interesting stuff. By that time, we were kind of full. You know, we had the oysters, and then we went and had the ceviches and the tiradito. And so we just want to have pasta because when I go to an Italian restaurant that's different and very cool, that's kind of how I judge them, by the pastas. And we had like a garganelli, which is almost like a quill-shaped pasta with rabbit and olives and lemon. And it was just phenomenally good.
What type of sauce would that be in?
It's like almost like a lemon butter.
Wow.
Very light. Some rosemary in there. And then on the bartender's recommendation, we had a tortelli, which is almost like a tortellini that's not folded. It's almost like a little round ravioli. Tortelli filled with sunchokes. A sunchoke tortelli.
Come back here.
Yeah. A sunchoke tortelli. And the sunchokes are the root of the sunflower seed. And they look like a malformed dirty potato. You know, it's a root vegetable. We use them pretty frequently at the club and at the restaurants. But I never really thought of stuffing a pasta with it. It's almost like I have made potato pasta, which is actually kind of a classic in Italy. But this was a variation on a theme I hadn't thought of. And I'll be thinking of it a lot now because it was fabulous. It was so good. And again, just a very light sauce of like a reduced chicken stock and butter. It was super good. And I had my doubts about it. I wasn't going to try it. There was some other things on there that I looked at. I thought I would have liked better. But I'm so glad I did because it was just absolutely gorgeous. And then we had an Arno Roberts. I finally found a Napa wine that, you know, had been written about that I liked. crazy, right? An Arno Roberts Gamay. Arno Roberts is a small little vineyard out there in Napa that's making some very interesting wines. And Gamay is the grape of Beaujolais, if you have Beaujolais Nouveau or any kind of Beaujolais.
Sure.
That's the grape. It's called Gamay. And it does pretty well in California. And it was just great. It was this light red that went brilliantly with the pastas. I mean, you got to be careful because you have rabbit there. It's like a white meat, you know. So white wine would be an okay choice with that. The same for the sunchoke. It's a root vegetable. But this was light enough, a light enough red that, it matched pretty well with the food. It was just a great, great night. We he sent out a dessert for us. And he also sent out, I guess the chef kind of recognized my name or whatever. He, you know, he comes to New York a lot. So he sent us out a couple of things. He sent me out a sformato, which is sformato, S-F-M-O-R. It's like three consonants in a row, so it's hard to pronounce, sformato. And it means upending or taking out. And they're baked in little custard cups or whatever. And this was a pumpkin sformato with like a little blue cheese sauce. So if you can picture a little like upside down cupcake made of pumpkin custard with a little bit of blue cheese on it and some dried, you know, squash or pumpkin on it and some mushrooms and a little bit of balsamic vinegar on it. It was really good. Nice little appetizer. It was light, you know, probably full of calories because there's cream and eggs in it. But
I would have to bet that it was a traditional dark-colored balsamic.
It was. It was a dark balsamic.
Which is so different for you.
Yeah, yeah. It was great. I mean, the whole thing, I mean, it was a perfect ending to the trip. I mean, it was just, you know, the food was fabulous all night long. The oysters were great. The ceviches were exemplary. The tiradito was fabulous. And then we went from American oysters to Peruvian, you know, ceviches to Italian. It was like a mishmash of, you know, restaurants. But each one was better than the next. And it was the cherry on the sundae, as they say, you know. So if you're ever out in San Francisco, and I advise you to go. San Francisco is a lot of fun. I mean, they'll talk about, you know, the crime in these cities now, and I'm sure you have to avoid, you know, areas like the Tenderloin and the Mission or whatever, where all the shenanigans are taking place. For the most part, they're it's just a great city and beautiful city. It's just it's a wonder to behold the hills, you know, how the hills dive right into the ocean. It's great. Anyway, so let's take a break, and we'll come back, and we'll chat some more.
Attention seafood lovers, check out FreshFinGourmet.com. You can enjoy specialty seafood delivered directly to your door. Their seafood products are sourced from mineral-rich waters across the globe and are responsibly harvested. Family-owned and operated by the Gulo family, who began their legacy in the food business from their personal love for seafood. You can order sushi-grade octopus, squid, Chilean sea bass, wild Dover sole filet, and much more. And it's not just fish. They also offer premium meat, imported Sicilian desserts, and delicious pasta. Try their Italian sausage or veal rib chop. Get the fastest delivery and shipping in the business. And their attention to detail in both packaging and shipping assures freshness and quality. Go to FreshFinGourmet.com and see the vast array of choices for your special meal creation. That's Fresh, F-I-N, gourmet.com. Specialty seafood delivered directly to your door with FreshFinGourmet.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Playing with Fire on 1100 WHLI and 104.7 WHLI FM, Long Island's own food, wine, and lifestyle show with your host, Tom Shawdell, chef, author, and restaurateur.
Okay, so now that you've heard about my little jaunt to San Francisco, maybe it's time to take a little jaunt, whether it's local or as far away as California, with your sweetheart. Because, you know, rumor has it Valentine's Day is coming up, Stu. So that might be a good excuse to, you know, get away for a couple of days and just bang a couple of restaurants over the head, go out there and eat some stuff, have some fun, and enjoy yourself.
That will be good. That would be good. It's funny, just real quick though, in line with that and love of yesteryear, a couple of weeks ago we were talking about restaurants that are now defunct, and we got an email from one of our listeners, Alan, who wrote in that a friend of his had mentioned that we were discussing restaurants of yesteryear, and some of these you had mentioned. Carl Hoppel's Watermill in Valley Stream.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Carl Hoppel's in Baldwin.
Yeah.
The East Point Inn in East Rockaway.
I remember that. My ex-father-in-law almost bought that place.
Wow.
Yeah.
Konings in Floral Park.
Konings, I remember.
The John Peel Room we had talked about in Westbury.
Yeah, we used to go pool hopping there.
The Maymaid Inn, which has become One North and now Opus One.
Yeah, my friend Jeff got married there.
This is one that you talk about, La Marmite. But I think that's the Copper Kettle now, right?
No, it's Copper Hill.
That's what I meant.
Yeah, Bill Holden from West End Cafe fame and Market Bistro. He was the chef there for years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then there was the Blue Spruce Inn in Roslyn.
Yes, the Blue Spruce.
The Arbor Inn in Rockville Center. El Mariachi in Rockville Center.
The Lincoln Inn in Rockville Center. Remember the Lincoln Inn?
Yes, that's one of the, boy, you're clairvoyant. The Ugo in Rockville Center, and then the Lincoln Inn. Cura Barn in Huntington.
Yeah, Cura Barn.
And Lazar Zula in Rockville Center. So at any rate, that's some additional input on restaurants of yesteryear. Maybe you took your love there.
It's funny. I almost have a connection to almost every one of those restaurants. It's like I'm out too much, you know, whatever.
So just real quick before Tom starts getting into the Valentines and romance, but here's your chance, listeners, to write into us at fire@whli.com, fire@whli.com. Tell us about how food or wine put romance in your life. I'm not talking about your getting your girlfriend drunk and whatever.
Easy there, easy there.
But some nice romantic story that we can repeat on our Valentine's Day show.
Yeah, it's always a fun day for, although a lot of pressure. I mean, you know, it's one of those Hallmark holidays that you got to get a card and chocolate and all that other stuff. It's obligatory, right? For restaurateurs, you know, my side of it has always been what a pain in the rear end because I got to start, you know, taking tables out and putting deuces in because, you know, you get very few big parties for Valentine's Day. It's always two, and you only have so many deuces on hand. So at Jewel, I had to cut tables. I had to cut new tabletops and screw them on.
So that's just, I have to interrupt as I've been known to do.
Go
so common tables, that's where couples get to sit with other couples. You go on a cruise. You don't usually get to sit on a table for two. They usually put you at, you know, a table of 10, and, you know, if there's two in your party or four, it's community site seating. So, wow, that I can see how, you know, though in a traditional restaurant where normally it's four tops and sixes whatever, and now everybody wants to be a two.
Yeah, it's hard to get people, you know, who want to have a romantic dinner to go, yeah, just a couple of strangers, you know, sit with them and chat it out and see how it works out. It doesn't happen.
But then you'd have to behave. You can't be yelling at your wife or the wife can't be kicking the husband under the table.
Well, hopefully that, you know, when it comes to, the Valentine's Day, that doesn't happen, you know. Although we had a funny thing happen one time, and you know, I'll just tell you this story. It's not Valentine's Day, but there was a guy who was coming into the restaurant. He wanted to propose to his fiance at the restaurant, which I don't understand why people do this in front of 200 people. I mean, because if she says no, you're screwed, you know? Anyway, it's an exhibitionist proposal, you know? So anyway, he said, you know, I want to have roses put on the table. Can you have roses for me? Yeah, okay, you know. So we buy the roses, and the hostess, for whatever reason, left the job of putting the roses on the table to the bus girl. Why, you ask? I don't know. Probably so we could screw it up, which is exactly what we did. Now, we had two tables with the same name. It was a common name, like James or Smith or something like that, right? And so a guy comes in with his wife and his mother-in-law, and they take him over to the table, and there's roses on it. And the wife says, oh, you should. That's what I can't. It's so sweet. You know, now the guy sees the roses there, knows he didn't buy them. Now, he's got a choice. You know, he can either come clean and hear about every offense he's made in the last 25 years, you know what I mean? Or he can just try and pretend that the roses are for her and see how it all works out. Now, I've been a guy for a long time, and frankly, that is a rookie mistake. You can't possibly think that's going to work out. So what he did was he was brilliant. He went to the hostess, excuse me a second, goes to the hostess and said, listen, they're not my roses. Can I buy them? You know, I'll pay you whatever you want for the roses just so I don't get in trouble. She says, no, I can't. They're on her own table. Takes them to the other table, and then you're going to have to buy my book to see how it all worked out. But let me tell you, it was mayhem. You know, it was complete mayhem.
So I'll match that story. This happened last week. So here you are telling us a story about how you went dining with your daughter at all these restaurants. So Rob Rush, one of the other on-air personalities here, and I were over at the Polo Lounge in Westbury last Thursday night. And there were two tables that we kept joking about with, you know, was that the guy there with his wife, with his daughter?
Uh-huh.
Because it wasn't his daughter.
Oh, no.
And there were two of those. So we had lots of entertainment.
Yeah.
But you were living the real reality.
Yeah.
You got to dine with your daughter.
I did. And sometimes we get these weird looks. You know, somebody said, yo, you're here with your wife. And I'm like, I start laughing. I'm like, yeah, don't let her know that. She'll be horrified, you know. It's funny. People just assume, you know, what are you going to do? You know, this old guy with this young woman, you know. Anyway, Valentine's Day is one of those days where you know, from the restaurant standpoint, we fight it, and it's hard. I always advise people, go out the day before, the day after. If it doesn't have to be that day, you know, some people are sticklers about that. It has to be that day, whatever. But if it doesn't, the day before, the day after is probably the way to go, because it's just so crazy on Valentine's Day that, you know, you're probably not going to get 110% that you're expecting from the restaurant. There's always going to be an issue, you know.
Wait, so Valentine's Day this year is a Monday night?
Which is perfect. I mean,
I was going to say, is that the ultimate? Because now you got Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, you probably got Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday, brunch, dinner, whatever, and then the real deal.
Yeah, it's almost like having a restaurant in the city where it's busy all the time. You know what I mean?
Wow.
Here, it's, you know, we're relegated to mostly weekends for the most part. And, yeah, it's nice. You know, when I'm in the restaurant business, you know, when I was in Jewel, it was always it would fall on a Friday or a Saturday, which was kind of inconvenient because you're going to be busy those days anyway. You want it to happen on a day where you're normally quiet, you know. It gives you a second Saturday is what it does.
So let me ask you, I mean, you're talking in generalities about a restaurant, but now you're in like a membership dining situation. How does the club handle Valentine's Day? I mean, is like Saturday night one of those theme dinners, and are they doing anything special?
They usually do some kind of, not hokey thing, but some kind of special menu for, you know, whatever. You know, it's different. The club is different because you have the same 350 families, right? So it's the same people every day, all day. And to try and keep them showing up, you got to constantly throw them curveballs here and there. You have to constantly try and do something that's a little different, you know? I mean, if you have a menu item, like I have a salmon that I've been dragging around for years, and I serve it on like a ratatouille with an olive tapenade, basil oil, and it's popular, and I sell a ton of them. You know, people, man, salmon, you changed it, you know? I could change it, but then people ask for it, you know? So you're always riding the rails between, you know, should I change it? Should I leave it on there? And, you know, the people that eat there often say, I need it changed. And the people want it. They say, why'd you take it off? You know, it's always that push me, pull you thing, you know.
Well, here's a quick tease. Next week, Tom, you got to share that recipe for ratatouille, because it's not something that's on everybody's tongue, the tip of their tongue. You don't hear that so often, but I want to know what the recipe is.
Well,
next
my,
week, you're on.
It's my granddaughter's favorite movie, you know, ratatouille. Yeah, it's You know, I still have the two restaurants out east, right? And I'm actually doing a wine dinner there next week at Amano with, it's actually sold out, with Pellegrini Vineyards, you know. But there's going to be another one in March, at the end of March, the 27th, I think, is a Sunday, with Macari, and those wines are real good, too. So anybody that wants to do that should give a call out to 298-4800-631. That's Amano if you want to get in on that one. It's a real good one. It's going to be about $100 a head for five courses and matching wines. But anyway, like I started to say, what did I start to say?
Let's roll the tape back.
I'm turning into Stu. Valentine's Day.
Tom, don't worry. The pain is almost over because we're getting near the end of the show.
You were talking about ratatouille and how the club changes so much.
You were talking about your salmon and on the ratatouille, and if you change it, then people cry. And
this is where my lack of experience as a commentator comes in, you know? I'm pretty good in the kitchen. I'm not so good at the radio thing.
Well, this is all very, very well scripted, as you would not know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's me. I'm well scripted. I'm hard to script, apparently. But yeah, it's so much different in the club than it is in the restaurant, because the restaurant, you have thousands of families that come through, you know, in the course of a year or whatever, you know. In the club, not so much. So they're always looking for something a little different. They're always looking for something a little, you know, odd or tweaked. You know, we do these different theme dinners. We do some parties, some cocktail parties, things like that. Try and, you know, a buffet here and there.
But a stereotypical Valentine's Day meal, I think, is surf and turf. I mean, it probably is on every menu for Valentine's Day.
Yeah, yeah. Eat a lot of that. Eat a lot of lobster. I sell a lot of oysters, believe it or not, caviar sometimes, you know. And funny champagne, which I think should be drunk all the time. But, you know, people save it for special occasions. Anyway, we're getting to that point, Stu. Thank God, because I've run out of script.
That's why you need some cryptocurrency.
I do, yeah. I need more than that. Anyway, we're going to end the show with Tom's Three Keys to Life, which is life is always, how do we end that again? Life is too short to drink bad wine. Treat every meal like it was your last, and keep chocolate in your life as important as sex and pizza. And I'll have my jaw fixed next week, I promise.
Attention seafood lovers, check out FreshFinGourmet.com. You can enjoy specialty seafood delivered directly to your door. Their seafood products are sourced from mineral-rich waters across the globe and are responsibly harvested. Family-owned and operated by the Gulo family, who began their legacy in the food business from their personal love for seafood. You can order sushi-grade octopus, squid, Chilean sea bass, wild Dover sole filet, and much more. And it's not just fish. They also offer premium meat, imported Sicilian dessert, and delicious pasta. Try their Italian sausage or veal rib chop. Get the fastest delivery and shipping in the business. And their attention to detail in both packaging and shipping assures freshness and quality. Go to FreshFinGourmet.com and see the vast array of choices for your special meal creation. That's Fresh, F-I-N, Gourmet.com. Specialty seafood delivered directly to your door with FreshFinGourmet.com.
Amano Osteria and Wine Bar has been created by Adam Lovett and Tom Shordell to bring the feel and flavors of a true Tuscan Osteria to the North Fork. Amano showcases local growers, farmers, cheese, and winemakers, marrying their ingredients with the taste traditions of the Tuscan countryside. The casual appeal, the flavors of Italy, and a moderate price structure appeal to all, ensuring year-round patronage. This North Fork eatery sends out snappy salads and seafood, pastas and antipasta, along with a respectable wine list. Amano features local vineyards and Italian varietals from the U.S. and Italian wines. The kitchen remains open until 11 and has established a later dining crowd, sparking a local nightlife dining scene. Amano is on the cutting edge of a new high-quality and affordable dining experience on the North Fork. Amano Osteria and Wine Bar, 13550 Main Road in Matatuck. Serving dinner daily, Amano is also open for lunch on Saturday and Sunday. For reservations and further information, call them at 631-298-4800 or visit them on the web at AmanoRestaurant.com.
Sweet Fancy Long Island is the award-winning dessert and pastry company that has become one of the hottest sources for bakery treats available for delivery on Long Island. Each mouth-watering creation has a personality all its own, teasing the palate with its rich flavors, complex textures, and eye-catching presentations. All items at Sweet Fancy Long Island are made 100% from scratch using the highest quality ingredients: Belgian chocolate, European butter, vanilla beans from Tahiti, and the richest, most flavorful fruits available. Their clients can enjoy any one of our delectable confections, from one-of-a-kind pastries, specialty and occasion cakes, French macarons, and karma cups. Their signature line includes an assortment of charming personalized size desserts served in miniature mason jars. The Sweet Fancy Long Island team takes great pride in presenting a unique, delicious, and elegant dessert experience and works closely with every client to create a memorable dessert that will add an exciting dimension to any celebration. Presently, the work of Sweet Fancy Long Island have been found in some of the area's top restaurants, country clubs, gourmet shops, catering facilities, and Food Network. Go to sweetfancyli.com to order online or to view their incredible gallery of desserts.